All right, it's 20th of January 2023. This is Children's Health Defence Roundtable, and we have the great honour of having Edward Dowd back with us to discuss. Many of you have been watching us streaming Davos World Economic Forum all week, and many clips going around the internet going viral. There's so many. If you really want to know what's going on in the world, these people are telling you right to your face. Ed, I'm going to go to you in one sec. I just want to pull up two headlines that we've seen that Amy pulled up this week. Let's have a look at those a second, because I want to add those to the discussion to you. Pfizer to buy Arena Pharmaceuticals in $6.7 billion all cash deal. So there's that. And we have one more for you as well. There you go. Pfizer CEO says the best days are ahead as company prepares for a wave of product launches. Ed, we're going to go straight to you. And I don't know if you've managed to watch any of the Davos stuff. I think we've lost Ed. Have we lost Ed?
Whoops.
Oh, good. We've got Ed back. Ed, I don't know what happened there, and I'm sorry about that. But can we actually go straight to you for comment? And did you manage to see what we were showing before you got
I didn't hear anything. I did not see anything.
Okay. Well, we were just talking about Davos, the World Economic Forum, and how they're just plainly saying what they're going to do with the chips and the vaccines and the money that Pfizer are so excited to make, and the 100 days to outrace the next pandemic, and how Africa pretty much needs to be the first one to get all of this. So what do you think about where we are right now with everything?
It's literally crazy town. They tell you what they're going to do. And if you comment on it, you're a conspiracy theorist. Look, we're in an era of corporate fascism. Sometime after the great financial crisis, there was a merger of state and corporations, and it's been 12 years of zombie economy for the rest of us, while the 1% got richer and richer through the free money printing and the zero interest rate. So here we are. It's a fusion of state and corporations, and under the color of law, they're going to implement their policies, and they're going to create what's called a surveillance state COVID pandemic economy while they control the financial collapse that's inevitable. That's basically the bottom line.
And we can stop this, Ed. I mean, Catherine Austin Fitz says we have about 2 years max to stop this. What do you think?
Oh, I think the cat's out of the bag. And for me, the whole crux of the issue is the vaccine issue. Basically, we just poisoned 5 billion people on the planet. Some people worse than others. I don't think it's a disaster for everybody. I don't want everybody to get the spawn in if they did get the vax. But once the bodies are accumulating, the disabilities are accumulating at a point where it's hard to hide this. If we can expose it, get mass consciousness, win over the marginal mind, we end this. It's over. They lose.
Ed, you're fairly new to our world, if you like, and we're seeing, I wonder, Sawyer, if you could just pull up the HPV thing, the forecast for the HPV. We know that they're going to be trying to mandate MMR, the measles, but look, this is Market Watch, and I wanted you to have a quick look at this, is that they are predicting a huge amount of money to be made in 2028 from this shot. I mean, what is it, 800, 839 million by 2028 for this particular vaccine, which says to myself and Mary Holland that they're potentially going to try and mandate that shot as well. Do you have what do you think about the other vaccines that they're trying to bring in and mandate, like the COVID shot?
Well, look, obviously there's a push for global vaccination programs it's a backdoor way of form of control and surveillance, and introducing fear into the population to get them to comply, and mandating vaccines that we clearly don't need. The natural immune system takes care of a lot of this, and it's the backdoor way to get compliance, control, surveillance, then usher in the digital bank, central bank digital currency. It's part of the slow walk to the ultimate goal, which is chipping you and having everything tied to your central bank digital currency. It's a dystopian nightmare, but they talk about it openly. And if you don't think they're going to try to do it, well, you know, good luck to you. Those of us that live in the real world are fighting back, and we're creating, we're using the current system to create alternative systems. And that's the goal of what a lot of us are doing now in this fight, is realizing that the system's so corrupt and bankrupt morally and ethically we have to basically start thinking about breaking away. In the meantime, try to work within the system to stop their progress. So that's kind of a twin engine of fighting right now. Let's talk about the business model of this. You suppress the immune system so you can sell other remedies later down the line to make even more money. Let's think about one of the big architects of the discussion on their side for a while, Bill Gates. What was he doing in the 80s? He created a operating system, became a monopolist. If you remember correctly, he was sued by the U.S. government for gross monopolistic tactics. And there's a belief that once he got the monopoly, he introduced viruses and then solutions to those viruses for his crappy operating system. So this business model was tried in software, and they're trying to roll it out to the human population, destroy the natural immunity, then sell follow-on products once that's destroyed for symptoms and disease control.
Right. I mean, we just saw actually recently in the news, if we could pull up the article about Pfizer doing a $7 billion, almost $7 billion all cash deal with Arena Pharmaceuticals, this goes to exactly what you're saying, Ed. You know, it's problem and then sell the cure. So this company, based out of San Diego, actually has a specialty area, one of a few specialty areas that's all about cardiology. So clearly, you know, there's the issues happening. We know about the myocarditis. We know about the people, you know, dropping suddenly. And Pfizer and Borla have dollar signs. You know, they see this as an opportunity to expand their portfolio, acquire these companies, and to make more money. And I believe he recently even said that their very best days are ahead as they're looking to expand their portfolio. So, Ed, as a finance expert, I'd love your opinion on, you know, what we're seeing now in terms of these companies trying to just, you know, ride the wave of destroying our health and then profiting off of it later.
Well, let's look at Moderna. Moderna is doing the same thing. They're eagerly investigating myocarditis all of a sudden. And I know for a fact from an insider that they just did a contract to, which I want to protect this person. They did a contract to scrape data from a provider of the data to investigate myocarditis. The irony of all this is that their product causes it. So they're trying to figure out how big the market is, obviously, so that they can create a vaccine. They're talking about creating a vaccine for myocarditis, believe it or not. You can't make this up. This is insanity.
All right, let's go to the Forbes article. Sawyer, if you can bring that up, because Ed, we really need you to talk about this. Have more athletes died suddenly since COVID-19 vaccines arrived? Such claims lack evidence. What do you say to that?
Oh, that's a complete and utter lie. In my book, Cause Unknown, we start off with the sudden athletic deaths. And let's forget the data for a second. If I asked the reader in my book, just go back in your memory bank, especially if you're older, in junior high, high school, college. Do you remember people dropping dead suddenly on the field? You may have heard a story once every 5 years, but it was so highlighted because it was national news. And in fact, there's some math around this. The Lausanne study, which is the most cited scientific study on this, over 1,000 scientific citations, took a stab at this. Now, it wasn't as comprehensive as they would like it, but they did the best they could. They found over a 38-year period, 1,101 sudden athletic deaths on the field under age 35. That's an average of 29 a year. So, yes, does it happen? Did it happen? It sure did. But as a Wall Street guy who studies frequency and velocity, something changed in 2021 to the point now we would be lucky to have a month with just 29 sudden athletic deaths. In my book alone, there's hundreds and hundreds of citations of these deaths. So based on just my books, and it's, my book is not comprehensive, there's more that we missed. Based on my book alone, it's a 12-fold increase over the prior 38 years. So that's just patently false on its claim. So then if you go into my metadata, all the all-cause mortality that is on, you know, all over my website, Finance Technologies, my partners, Carlos and Yuri, did the heavy lifting on that. It's the Humanity Project. Basically, we show the evidence of the crimes. There's been a tremendous increase in excess mortality across the board, especially in younger age people, which shouldn't be happening. And some of the standard deviation events we've recorded are upwards as high as 23. A three standard deviation event happens 0.03% of the time. And we have an executive in January of 22, Scott Davison from One America, said a 10% increase in excess mortality is a once in a 200-year flood. We have recordings of, in 21, 40% for the group life insurance policy folks from ages 25 through 64, the healthiest amongst us. And in all these countries, we have excess mortality between 20 and 30% for younger folks. It's a disaster. I don't, when people say there's no excess deaths, they're just patently lying. And it's just false.
So, Ed, three things. I want to really thank you for writing your book. I have it both in hard copy and electronically, and it is so compelling. And I think one of the things that gives it validity is that you're coming from a different world. You're a financial guy. You're not a doctor like me who has seen vaccine injury over the last 23 years and is looking for it where maybe I might have some bias to overreact. But you're doing cold, hard numbers, which represent young people who had mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and children. So that's the first thing. I strongly encourage everybody to take a look at that. The second thing about the Forbes article, it really bothered me that there are so many false claims being made. And in this article, they actually tried to denigrate Peter McCullough, who has published more on COVID with about 60 or more articles now than anyone else who can quote off the top of his head the scientific research with the title and the authors of the article. And they tried to say that he was making his conclusions based on a non-monitored website where like disgruntled people were reporting that their friends and loved ones were dying. So that just infuriates me. And I really want us to step up and defend the truth in any way we can. The third thing is I am getting from Pfizer now. I've always been saying they're coming for our kids. Now Pfizer is offering to give me free Paxlovid from the government so that I can give it to pediatric patients down to the age of 12. So a few things, you know, the risk of mortality in the pediatric population is statistically zero. I'm not supposed to use ivermectin or vitamin D or vitamin A or all the other ways we know to support the immune system, but I'm supposed to give these kids Paxlovid, which actually gets the record for having the most drug interactions of any other drug that's on the market. It's quite phenomenal. There are over 100 drug interactions. So when in the video that we showed at the beginning, they talk about this is a crisis, but this is an opportunity. Well, clearly the opportunity is for them to come for our kids. And in this case, with trying to push Paxlovid in adolescents, they are giving them a drug that doesn't work, that's associated with rebound, and it has significant drug interactions. So everybody just be aware and protect your children.
Let me comment on that. Again, I'm not a doctor, but I'm also an analyst. And from what I understand, in Paxlovid was designed as the ivermectin substitution that it could profit from because it was now patented. Ivermectin is not patented and there's no money in it. So Paxlovid, when they did the test, they only did it on the vaccinated. Why did they not do it on the unvaccinated? Because they knew that the unvaccinated wouldn't show rebound. But the rebound in vaccinated is a fact. And they why would you design a test and not test it on the unvaccinated? It made no sense. So they knew when they went into the test that this was going to be the result. And they took not half the population, but a large cohort of the population out of their testing. It's absurd and fraudulent in my mind. What we've decided to do is not get into what's causing the death. We just count ones and zeros. And this is so bad that it's showing up in all-cause mortality. And that's why this is a tragedy. And that's why it can't be hidden. People have asked us to look into the different, what the different causes are. We may do that later, but right now we're focusing on this. And part of the problem we have is we don't trust the classification codes. Right. There's reason to be suspect that there may be, we don't have proof of this, but there's enough. Josh Sterling, one of the individuals who initially helped me with this analysis, he's doing his own work now. He hasn't had proof, but it seems to me that the CDC may be doing what's called reclassification fraud. They get batches of, say, sudden deaths, and then later they mysteriously disappear and are reclassified. This is classic fraud that I saw in financial companies. Enron did what's called reclassification fraud. There's two types of expenses, capital expenses and normal operating expenses. If you run an operating expense through the income statement, it shows less cash flow. If you capitalize it, it's then amortized over time and depreciated, and that would show higher cash flow. So they took normal operating expenses and classified them as capital expenses, and that's why their balance sheet looked so good for so long. They were committing reclassification fraud. So we suspect that's going on. So we don't have proof, but that's why we're not getting into that kind of granular detail, because A, we don't need it. The proof is something awful is going on. And B, it would just kind of muck up the analysis for now.
And absolutely. And talking about reclassification fraud, it's interesting that there is no diagnosis code right now for COVID-19 vaccine injury or death by COVID-19 vaccine. And there are diagnosis codes for vaccine injury from the other vaccines. They're usually called poisoning, but there is no code. So there is no way that, you know, from a medical basis, from a digital basis, that you can indicate somebody had a COVID-19 vaccine injury unless, you know, you're fortunate enough for CDC to accept your VAERS report, and who knows if that's going to happen.
Correct. And where are we today? So I focus on the group life population because the Society of Actuaries did a study in 2016 that proved that this group of people is the most healthy amongst us. They work for Fortune 500 and mid-sized companies. And their excess mortality in 2021 was 40%. The general population was 32%. The good news is it's come down. And I focus on millennials because they shouldn't die. Okay. But so the last two quarters as of June 22, so the first two quarters of 22 were running at around 23% excess mortality. Still unacceptable and not. So we had a pull forward, I think, from the mandates, but it's still running at 23%, which is just off the charts. And it's flatlining. If things were getting better, it should be decreasing towards zero excess mortality. It's flatlining at 23%. I'm being told by an insider that third quarter is likely going to come in again at 23%. And there's indications that the fourth quarter of the quarter ended December of 22, it may have reaccelerated slightly. If that's the case, then we're not even close to out of the woods yet.
I just want to interrupt here very quickly and go to Brian Hooker, because I think this is super important. So whenever anybody puts anything on Facebook or whatever social media they're still on, and the fact checkers come straight in saying safety trials have been done, blah, blah, blah. We know right now in Australia, the COVID-19 and flu shot combined are in phase two of trials on 2,000 Australians. And it's spit up like this. You're in three groups. Group number one takes the COVID shot. Group number two takes the flu shot. Group number three takes the combined flu and COVID shot. And this is serious. This is, Brian, I need you to come in here to remind people, this is how they are doing the trials, correct?
Correct. And it's a big cheat, because they're looking at their baseline is not unvaccinated. Their baseline is placebo control. And perhaps from the information that Pfizer's original clinical trial that they did not want to release for 75 years is starting to hit the fan. And so they're going back to their old ways, saying, okay, you know, the baseline is somebody who receives one of our vaccines, because that is the new normal. And so they're doing away with the control group. They want, those of us who have not received the COVID-19 vaccine, and perhaps those of us who have not ever received a flu shot or something of that nature, they want us to go away. The new normal will be sick people. And then they'll just do the comparison for this combined flu vaccine, COVID-19 bivalent vaccine. They'll look at a sick population and they will compare it and see if they actually get sicker. From what we know from the original COVID-19 vaccine trials, they did get sicker. They did die more frequently, but yet they ignored the information. And so, we're chasing our tail, and the clinical trials are absolute positively garbage.
And Brian, I want to follow up on two things. One, Ed pointed out that in the Paxlovid trials, they didn't test it on the unvaccinated. And then you were talking about other ways that vaccine research tends to be so suboptimal. I want to remind our viewers that even in the original Pfizer trials, they tried to pick really healthy people, you know, the Avengers and the Olympic athletes among us, and people were disqualified if they were pregnant or had heart disease or chronic diseases of other sorts. And yet when they rolled out the vaccines, they rolled it out to the entire population. And especially here in the United States, we tend to be a pretty sick population. Remember that in childhood now, at least 54% of children have at least one chronic illness. So test it in healthy people and then roll it out to everybody and let the chips fall where they may. That's a great business plan, but it is not at all ethical in terms of medical progress.
Right, Ed, I have a question for you in terms of your book and as you were analyzing the data. I mean, I think what was so shocking was the huge excess death in the younger population. And you made, you know, a comment about how the death of the millennial group was almost equivalent to the Vietnam War. So I'd love if you could talk a little bit more about that in terms of what that percentage of death increase looked like in the younger audiences.
Yeah, so in the third quarter of 2021, in March of 2022, Josh Sterling and I discovered something pretty shocking, because the CDC at the time was not breaking out the data by age cohort. And when we did, we saw that excess mortality, and he did it, you know, he has actuarial training. So he created a baseline that went back 5 years. So we had a baseline, and we calculated that into the third quarter of 2021, millennials excess mortality shot up. It was hovering around 30% in the spring. Still bad, don't get me wrong, that's atrocious. It shot up to 84% over the August, September, October timeframe, and went to a new all-time high. And so from March of 21 through Feb of 22, we calculated 61,000 millennials died excessively in that timeframe, okay? With a peak in the third quarter of 2021. And then it came down. And it's, like I said, it's hovering around 23%. Why did we have this event, this temporal accelerate? Again, on Wall Street, I'm a signal guy. What happened? Why was this rate of change so large and stunning into the third quarter? Well, if you use deductive reasoning, you have any kind of brain cells in your head, you say, what changed? Well, universal vaccination and job mandates. So what happened was the millennial group, who was probably hesitant anyways to take it because they're healthy, and lots of people were being told, hey, you know, this thing doesn't affect young people. They were given a choice, get the jab or lose your job. Well, that's why we saw that spike into the third quarter. And the naysayers will come to me and say, well, there were drug overdoses. Oh, really? Everyone decided to overdose on heroin and fentanyl while employed in the third quarter. Secondly, suicides. Well, there was a mass suicide pact in the millennials. They all talked to each other online and said, let's off ourselves. And then the most absurd is the missed cancer screening appointments. I'm 56. I've never had one in my life. I don't even know what this is. When I was 25 through 44, I certainly didn't think about it. You know, when you get a cancer screening, when you present with illness, you go into the doctor, you feel like crap, and they run tests. All right. And you don't do preemptive cancer screening. So and don't tell me everyone got cancer in the third quarter of 21. Then in August of 2021, and when I was writing my book, the Society of Actuaries verified the numbers we came up with in March. So we went from two dudes on the internet to the Society of Actuaries literally coming out with basically the same number as us. And it's even worse because the group life people are a subset of the CDC millennial number. And again, this Society of Actuaries has proven this group of people die at a third the mortality of the general population in any given year. So this is just, you know, undeniable that something happened. The only explanation in my mind is a vaccine. If anybody can come up with a better explanation, I've yet to hear it. And I'm at the point now where the vaccine makers need to prove to us it's not doing this, not us. I'm done trying to prove my case.
And Ed, I would like to have our viewers know a little bit about the Bradford Hill criteria, which is a mechanism of epidemiologic research that tries to sort out the issue of causation versus association. And we actually look at the data that the CDC has, the VSAFE data. There is a very good argument to be made that when you look at vaccines potentially causing these deaths, there's temporality, meaning that they often happen either within 1 or 2 days or within a week, and then there's a second peak in about 5 to 6 months. There are also plausible biologic mechanisms by which this can happen. And we've talked in detail before about the evils of the spike protein and the concerns about the lipid nanoparticles. This data is now being reproduced in multiple forms. So I think that the people that are trying to put up these arguments that it must be suicides, it must be overdoses, are really not paying attention to the science, which is that we should be applying these well-established epidemiologic criteria to the association between vaccines and sudden death. And my analysis is when we do that, it's a very...
I didn't hear the last part, Elizabeth.
Sorry, I said it's a very strong case that it's not just association, it is causation when you apply these Bradford Hill criteria.
Right. And look, the argument I get is correlation is not causation. You know, when you start getting, you know, we put out on our website, the Humanities Project, a piece on disabilities, and we tracked vaccine uptake in the U.S. with the disabilities, the increased disabilities we've seen, and the R square was 0.89. Okay, so, you know, 0.89 is a pretty good fit, and it's large numbers, and you know that what that suggests, and given the huge rate of change we saw in disabilities, you know, a 3 standard deviation year over year rate of change, again, that happens 0.03% of the time. At the very least, questions should be asked by the health authorities. There's no interest in looking into this issue. And in fact, you know, prior to us going on the show, we were all discussing why has no one really come out and debunked me, because they would give attention to my book. And my book, I think, is pretty much the smoking gun mic drop data set that reveals that the vaccine is doing this.
It's absolutely crazy. And you know, in talking about, you know, the dismissiveness of the sort of the public health institutions, I want to point out, I did an analysis, or actually the main researcher on it was Carl Jablonowski, who's a senior fellow or senior researcher here at Children's Health Defense. And what he found, and let include me in on, was that the CDC had a signal. They had a statistically significant signal for myocarditis on February 19th, 2021. That was just weeks after the rollout of the vaccine. But when you look at when CDC was then forced into a corner because other individuals were finding this information, CDC was covering up this information, and they finally showed this information and showed, yeah, oh, there could possibly be a signal with myocarditis. They waited 3 months later on May 27, 2021. And if you look at the vaccine uptake in the United States from when they knew about it to when they actually let on about it, it went from 8% to over 50%. So they waited on it just so they could injure more people, just so more people could get vaccinated. And there is a question in there, Ed. I do see that, you know, vaccination rates are now tapering off. Less and less people are getting boosters. You know, it's like the pharmaceutical industrial complex and the government complex has overplayed their hand. Do you see a silver lining in that with some of these mortalities going down?
Well, so that's what I would love to see is excess mortality amongst the millennials in the group life cohort to start to head back towards zero, meaning zero excess deaths. It's hovering at 23. It's flatlined at 23%. And if it does go up in the fourth quarter, something else is at play, unfortunately, because booster uptake has gone down. Then we have to get concerned about medium to long-term effects. In the disability data, the good news is the rate of change has, the second derivative has slowed, which in my world means the growth rate's slowing year over year. The problem is the trend is still up. And the trend line hasn't been broken, meaning if this was a stock chart and you were long stock, you wouldn't have to worry about any technical breaks and investigate why the stock is breaking down. It reached a peak in September of 2022 with 3.2 million additional injured people in the U.S. So it went to a high of 33.2 million total in the U.S. from about 29 to 30. It came down a little bit in October, November. It went up 100,000 in December. So if you looked at that trend, it's not broken either. So I'm cautiously optimistic that things will get better, but we need to be on high alert if things continue along this line.
Ed, I have a quick question for you. Well, first of all, it seems to be a genetic epidemic of sudden death is what the white coats want us to think right now. But we have emails and messages coming in from our viewers and people around the world who are struggling in all kinds of areas. They're either sick or their family members are sick, cancer through the roof. But also they're struggling financially. They can't afford to buy food. They can't find organic food. And the list goes on. They can't pay their utility bills. What is your advice, Ed Dowd's advice, to the average American or person around the world who is just thinking that there's no hope? What do they do with their little bit of money that they have got? And how do they prepare to survive 2023? Because there is no doubt, having watched Davos, that they are going to, the fear mongering is going to go through the roof. They're already starting, as I said, on the measles and various other so-called epidemics and viruses that are going to hit us, or they're going to try and say are hitting us. We're in for a tough time. Masks are starting to be mandated back in schools. They're trying to pass a bill for the flu shot for all daycare people. And you can see it starting to ramp up. They're kind of testing us. What is Ed Dowd's advice to the people? And what would you like to see us all do to stop this?
Well, for people in tough economic situations, I feel for you. And if you're in ill health, I feel for you. But you can't be in fear. Fear will actually make you sicker. Anxiety causes depression eventually, and you'll become, mentally disabled. So don't be in fear. The other thing that you need to think about, and look, we had a Great Depression, and I've been talking to people about that remember, relatives that remember the Great Depression and stories. Even though they were tough times, one thing that really happened and is starting to happen, and you need to take charge of your life, you need to start building a community of people in similar situations and take care of each other. I had the honor of hanging out with a 9/11 fireman two nights ago. He was over at my friend's house. He's retired. And I asked him about being a fireman. And one of the things that I learned is that they are a family. And that's why firemen are so proud of what they do and their closeness to each other. And when, these guys aren't paid a lot. And when someone got injured in the family, they throw a benefit. And everybody was, even though you weren't related, you were family. And they took care of each other. They, if you needed a addition built on the house, the whole fire engine house would go over and help you build it. This is what people need to do now. Tough times are ahead, but if you get together and pool resources, I'm a proud man living in my little apartment, and I'm going to try to make it through, or proud woman. Those days are over. We need each other. So build community, build like-minded individuals. And you know, this is also going to be a time where you get human relationships are going to become more important than material wealth. I've made statements that the days of living in your suburban 3,000 square foot suburban home, feeling good about yourself are over, because you're going to need other people. And that's just the reality of the world that's coming. And it's actually going to be an exciting time, because we're going to get back to like basic values. So it's both hopeless and hopeful at the same time. You just got to change your mindset and not live in fear. That's kind of my advice.
I love that advice, Ed. You know, it's true. You know, firemen, even policemen, there's a brotherhood. I feel like we have that in the medical freedom movement too. You know, it's brothers and sisters, and no matter who you meet from anywhere in the world who's been impacted personally, you know, whether it's a vaccine injury to their own, to themselves, their family, their children, whether their children have been kicked out of school, there's such a bond there because everyone is fighting this corruption and tyranny, you know, together. And I agree with you, you know, community and innovation is where we move forward. And I think a lot of times, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, you know, so when your kids are no longer able to attend school because of mandates, that's when the homeschool cooperatives and other things start to happen. You know, the innovation we're seeing right now in healthcare with groups like the Wellness Company, and this is the way forward for us, right, is to carve our own path forward, to create new opportunities within healthcare, within schooling, and to not operate in their paradigm. So I love that aspect and your advice on that. I had a question for you in terms of, I think one of the last times you were on the shows with us, you had mentioned you and your partner authoring a letter to the heads of all the insurance, you know, the executives of all the insurance agencies. Is there any, you know, responsibility that they have, any fiduciary responsibility to really come open on this as you are and sound the alarm? I mean, they're sitting on all this data. I'm just curious if there's any follow-up since you've sent that letter or any discussions that you're having with them, where they're willing to open it up and be transparent about it as well.
So Josh Sterling is spearheading that. We're all battling different fronts. I'm more public. He's more of an industry guy. So he's now handling that. And the good news is his working group, we sent out those letters in April, and we had about 25 people on the call. From that, we had a small working group of five people. And the good news is it's grown to about 25. And the reason it's growing is because it's dawning on some of these executives that something's going on. So there's progress. And at some point we need somebody brave enough to come out and make a public statement, but the good news is that there's progress. The other good news is Wall Street. Part of convincing people that there's a horrendous disaster is social proof, and nothing gets people's attention more than money. And I just got off the phone before talking to you with a Wall Street banker. He has been on board this issue for a long time. He's punching. He punched internally. He's now going to punch externally. And capital is marshaling against what just happened, because it's dawning on some people on Wall Street that they were on the wrong side of the trade. So things are going to start happening from a capital formation standpoint to take bets against the current regime, and that's good news. Money talks, BS walks. So there's if you have a friend that thinks we're crazy, say Wall Street's starting to turn and the early smart money is starting to raise capital, and he's going to do something very interesting. I can't divulge. It's different from my hedge fund, but he's a banker on Wall Street, and he's going to start convincing people internally. If we get one bank to flip, that would be great.
Ed, I have a question for you, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but I just need to put this out there. Before this COVID situation, people like Dr. Hooker and myself vaccinated our children, and both our boys had horrific seizures and now are brain injured for life. And we are two of a great many around the world, and many, you know, called us crazy and anti-vaxxers and all those kind of things. And I traveled on a bus, and I've interviewed so many families with every single shot that you can imagine, and the parents' stories of what happened to their children, babies dying after vaccines, and the list goes on. It was a massive education for us all. My question to you is, has this made you look at what the parents before were screaming out about? Has this made you see that there are other shots, in my opinion, all shots, that are not safe and not effective and extremely dangerous. Have you been able to look down that rabbit hole?
I don't even need to go down the rabbit hole. What I've discovered in my journey is this. The FDA is so thoroughly corrupted that this has been going on for a long, long time, and I didn't know it. And a lot of us on Wall Street didn't know it. This is the bridge too far, and this has been the way of business for well over 20 years. So I now question anything that comes to market, any product. And, you know, I would not hesitate to say, I'm never going to take another vaccine again. That's it. I'm done. I took a couple flu shots when I was at BlackRock and they started offering them for free. And I got the flu. Stopped taking. I haven't had a flu shot in well over 10 years. And I'm never taking one again. I did make the mistake of getting a tetanus booster shot in 2017 when I went to go see a general practitioner. I'm healthy as a bell. They wanted to give me a statin. I agreed to the tetanus booster, and I felt like crap for 2 weeks. And this is pre my journey here. I don't see any reason to get any of these things.
Thank you, Ed, for that perspective. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, sadly, it does take an adverse event to wake up. But one other point I want to make, I don't know if we have the graph available, but there was a study done recently where they were, you know, talking about the misinformation and the disinformation and the source of it. It was actually published in Nature about a few months ago. Actually, I think it was back in the spring. And they said that Children's Health Defense was the top source of this misinformation or disinformation, that 1 in 4, you know, were finding their information from us, you know, from our website. And that's what was going on, you know, around and originating the source of it. So I just call that winning. I mean, I think that, you know, that just shows the impact of truth that we are bringing to the movement. You know, it's a bit of a badge of honor. So for us, you know, we're happy to be those truth tellers. We're happy, Ed, to have you join our team as a truth teller. And we just want to thank you for coming on the show today and for writing your amazing book. So if you could just remind everyone about Cause Unknown. This was published, you know, as a CHD imprint along with Skyhorse Publishing. It was just released in mid-December. Where everyone can find this book for those who haven't picked it up yet?
It's available on Amazon. I'm not sure if it's in bookstores yet. Maybe it is. And you can go to skyhorsepublishing.com. One comment I'd like to make about, you know, the demonization of Children's Health Defense. If there's any skeptics on this in this audience about Children's Health Defense, let me say this. The people that are in Children's Health Defense aren't getting rich doing this, but the people that are debunking them are certainly getting rich. So ask yourself, when you just step back, who's making all the money? It's not CHD. CHD is doing this because they're passionate and they know they're doing the right thing. So that's who I follow. I follow people who do the right thing. I don't follow people who are profiteers and shills for large corporate dollars. I mean, wake up, folks.
Amen to that. Yeah, most of the parents are struggling to, you know, recover their injured children and spending, you know, eons of money looking into every modality, every possible way to bring back health for their children. There's certainly no money, you know, profiting in what we are doing, unlike the pharmaceutical industries and the billions and billions of dollars, if not trillions, that they're making. So thank you, Ed Dowd. Thank you so much for joining us today and being on the show. We appreciate everyone being here. I'm just going to close out with a couple of notes in terms of what's coming up next right here on CHD TV. Tomorrow, you're going to want to join us early in the morning, coming in at 7 a.m. Eastern time, straight from London. We're going to have our EU correspondent, Anna, will have live coverage on the Truth Be Told rally. It's going to be giving a voice to the vaccine injured, including a number of speakers, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Dr. Robert Malone.